Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to yet another scintillating broadcast of the KWUR Theater of the Air. I'm your host, David Reinstrom.
And I'm your host, David Brunel Brutman.
We are your two hosts.
Two hosts.
Two hosts. We are binary hosts, actually. Huh? Binary hosts.
Yeah, that's very appropriate, because...
Tonight's broadcast theme is...
Robots.
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 There are a lot of them.
There are a lot of them.
Tonight we will be producing, broadcasting the very best robot-related radio theater that KWUR 90.3 FM has to offer.
Yes, indeed. And you'll hear all kinds of different robot voices.
It's true. Dave and I have long studied the various ways to create robot voices.
Right. You could call us robot horse aficionados.
Horse aficionados? Yes. Or also robot connoisseurs or ronisseurs or, let's see, robe experts. Our knowledge of robots is robust. Let's just leave it at that.
That's good.
Okay.
Our knowledge of robots is robust. That's starting to sound to me like the beginning of like a Gilbert and Sullivan song.
Well, perhaps I will come up with one while we are playing one of our longer sketches today.
Perhaps.
A robot patter song.
So stay tuned for that.
Oh, what have I locked myself into?
Okay, I'm going to make you do it.
I know
I'm
you
I'm
going to
make you do it, too.
I know you will. So tonight, the first thing we're going to begin with, or should we talk about the various ways one can make one's voice sound like a robot?
Right. This is maybe we can tease our listeners throughout the night, and every once in a while, we will present a new and exciting robot voice method.
Okay.
So here's method number one.
Hello. I am a robot. Specifically, an English robot. I am fluent in over 7,000 languages spoken by robots.
You know, move the mic sort of slightly more to the side.
Yeah, okay. Like this?
No. So
like I'm talking like this?
Yeah, that's better.
What are you trying to tell me to do, meatbag?
So, listeners, David Reinstrom is now speaking into a common mug.
Yes.
Which...
It's a plastic mug. I got this mug. This says Vice Presidential Debate, October 2nd, 2008. It's a plastic. Yeah, it's from the Anheuser-Busch proud sponsor table. Because I covered the vice presidential debates with K-Wer, for K-Wer last year. And Budweiser was rolling out their American Ale. And I got a little souvenir mug. So I brought it to the studio.
Good. It does not... You do not have to have a vice presidential debate souvenir mug.
You do not need an Anheuser-Busch mug.
Any mug or glass will do, but if you speak into it and hold it just slightly at an angle, you can get a robot voice.
It's true. I saw Peter Serafinowicz do this with a carafe, actually.
You can also get a Darth Vader voice, which is very pleasing. I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Well, Lord Vader, I stopped going to catechism class years ago.
The Sith catechism is very important. Also, Sith nuns will teach it to you.
I don't...
They use lightsabers instead of rulers.
Yeah, that was the worst part about Sith catechism class, Lord Vader.
Well, I made it through. I only lost both of my hands. I don't know what you're complaining about.
All right, enough of that. Let's dive into the archives. Lord Vader.
Yes.
Lightning!
Is it time to play?
Yeah,
is it time to play a
sketch? I just used forced lightning on you. You weren't even paying attention.
I'm sorry.
Forced lightning!
No, I'm sorry.
No!
Let's get to the meat of tonight's first program.
We're going to play Minions.
Minions is one of the first sketches we ever did, actually.
It is.
And
we still love it.
I still love it.
It's a documentary style sketch.
From QXJ News, based out of... it's in the North Sea somewhere. It's off the coast of Britain. It's a small...
Yeah, and it's the one of the first and only in-depth exposés of a real true-to-life supervillain's lair.
Yeah. So let's get right to it.
I've often watched the island from the mainland, though the fog makes it difficult to see. The volcano at its summit belches smoke on this foggy and cold morning. From a distance, it would seem as though the only activity on the island is geothermal, but deep within its caldera, Dr. E.Q. Ignatius... mad genius and criminal mastermind, plots himself closer and closer towards complete world domination. The good doctor's wild schemes, though usually foiled by Monsieur Formidable, that francophonic freedom fighter, are and have always been impressive. Their scope and complexity boggles the mind. Truly genius is a suitable title for a man. But no matter how brilliant Dr. Ignatius may be, he cannot bring about his plans on his own. Hundreds of hard-working local men and women serve under Dr. Ignatius as lab techs, guards, cooks, and defense attorneys. Here in Cordisbach, a quiet coastal town, the doctor is one of the largest employers in the region. Many local businesses supply the island's expensive and varied needs, and local fishermen can sell even the smallest catches to Ignatius's kitchen staff. But although Ignatius gets his share of media attention, the people that work for him rarely do. This is their story. I'm Clive Vanderhouse, QXJ News. I spoke to Wensleydale Thrinebolt, a local mechanic at the EZ Auto Repair Shop in Cordisbach. His brother Ned works for Dr. Ignatius.
Yeah, me brother works for the doctor. Seems a decent enough start, according to what he tells me, I mean. Ned's always bringing work home on the weekends. It's usually some kind of robotic animal or another. Doctor's all about robot animals, he is.
Last spring, a huge horde of robot wildlife descended upon the flagship bank of Credit Suisse in Zurich, overpowering and disabling the guards and making off with over 36 million in Swiss francs, some of the most stable currency in the world. It's not known who was behind the attack, but experts are fairly certain that it was Dr. Ignatius, for whom robotic animals are something of a calling card. No one was injured in the robbery.
Considered working for the man I did. When I graduated from the technical college, I figured maybe he'd want me, as Ned had been working for him for a year or so by then. But the auto shop was hiring, and I didn't want to move out to the island every week.
Ferry runs every 3 hours, but folks that work there full-time tend to go home only on the weekends.
That's Barnaby Thimble, a bartender at the Threather's Screw, a harbour bar and hangout for fishermen, dock workers, stevedores, and other synonyms for maritime professionals.
He works them hard, but I've never heard anyone speak truly ill of the doctor. Met him once. He comes over to the mainland a few times a year for important town functions. Mostly, though, he keeps to himself.
Shook his hand. Firm, good grip. Rough hands. Works hard, he does. I can respect that.
The Threadless Screw, Thimble's bar, is a clean place, with all sorts of seaside paraphernalia. Old life preservers, anchors, carved and painted seagulls. I spoke to Nancy, one of the servers, over lunch.
And here's your sandwich, Clive.
Thank you.
So, what's to be said about Mr. Ignatius? He's been good for our community ever since he took up on that island. Made us real prosperous like he did. He revitalised our economy and gave us something to look up to. The number of high school kids what go on to college out of Cordisbach has gone up by a good 15% in the last 4 years. They want to go get educated, learn science, just like Dr. Ignatius.
I had to learn more about the operation. I had to know what the facility was like, so I took a ferry over to the island.
Now, if you look out over to your right, you can see the patrol boats. They're always active, looking for superheroes and do-gooders. What you don't see is the attack robot crocodile. Those are deep below the surface.
I made it to the island without incident. I couldn't be sure if a ferryman was joking about the attack crocodiles, but I suppose it's best to be safe. Ignatius's lair is within these doors, two huge iron portals, easily a dozen feet high. I'm going to knock.
Yes?
Hello. Yes, my name is Clive Vanderhouse, QXJ News. I believe you should have me on a list.
We do, Mr. Vanderhouse. You're clear to come inside for your security screening.
I made my way into the island through massive doors into a very comfortable-looking corporate office. A woman sat behind a desk, and two men in suits and ID badges stood on either side of her. I removed my hat. Hello, I'm Clive Vanderhouse, and I suppose I'll need a press pass?
Yes, Mr. Vanderhouse, but first, a security screening.
Oh?
Yes, we never know what you might have brought in with you.
The two men moved towards me.
Our security agents will be gentle and respectful, provided you are truthful and honest. We're not a governmental organization, Mr. Vanderhouse. You needn't blindly obey us as you probably obey them. If we ask you a security question, you don't have to tell us the truth. but we'll beat you with truncheons until you do.
I allowed myself to be frisked without incident, then metal detected, and then explosives sniffed by an unpleasantly thorough dog.
Just a safety precaution. You understand. Sometimes superheroes bug unwitting stooges with all sorts of devices.
I was no stooge, but I took it in stride. I told her that the last time I'd even spoken to a superhero was 8 months ago. That was Coinslot, the American superhero who always has correct change. The interview ended abruptly when Coinslot had to rescue a nearby motorist from the fearsome clutches of a parking meter. I ended up speaking to the woman at the desk. She was conservatively dressed and rather mysterious-looking. A pair of chopsticks held her dark hair in a bun. She sat, legs crossed, watching me critically.
I'm Dr. Ignatius's amanuensis. Secretary. I make sure no undesirables get in, at least not through the front door. We've got banks of security camera feeds right here, on this desk, and against this wall over here. We've had cameras trained on you since a little bit before you got off the boat. We've got 3 separate radar arrays in case 1 or 2 get jammed. But I'm not really the one you should talk to for security issues. Here's Melvin, the island's chief security officer.
Melvin, a balding young man in a lab coat, took me down the hallway and gave me a quick survey of the island's defenses. Our facility is probably one of the most secure in the Northern Hemisphere. Nobody gets in or out without us knowing. See that camera? We've got a camera watching that camera to see if it's been sabotaged. And we've got another camera watching that camera. And bolted at the top of that is a teeny-weeny little baby camera. We're very secure. All of our air vents are full of razor blades. Razor blades laced with kryptonite. No do-gooders will ever scramble through that on their hands and knees. On top of that, we've bolted them all closed. Hella closed. The only thing that gets through our air vents is air. But that a pain in the bonnet to clean, believe you me. That's why we use prisoners to clean them. G'day, 0012! Did you enjoy your pancakes today? Tomorrow, it's waffles for brekkie. Those waffles, too, are filled with razor blades. We run a tight ship here. The boss brooks no argument, and we tend to go along with what he says. He's a good employer. I wanted to see what someone slightly lower on the food chain had to say about that, so I spoke to Tom, a perimeter guard with a love for Baroque architecture.
The design of the place is really fascinating. A number of very interesting influences came together in a lovely sort of synchrony to form the ramparts here. You can see a little rococo in there, but really, the balustrades, just there. Absolutely fantastic. I could be a henchman for anyone, but I love the look of this place. I can't stand the postmodern look most supervillains are messing about with these days. Captain Malevolence? Too pointy. Felonious Monk? Too austere. And I wanted to be close to home. I have a wife and kids in town.
But being a supervillain's henchman isn't just admiring the view. Tom and the other guards have a number of different responsibilities.
Some of the more experienced guards will teach a course in basic guardsmanship for each batch of new recruits. You'd be surprised at how many new henchmen can't even hit a target at 50 paces. In the old days, we just assumed that if you were going to work for a criminal, that you could handle a firearm. But, well, we've discovered that's just not true. So we do orientation exercises, icebreakers, getting-to-know-you games, and the like. Everyone has to know everyone else, or someone could easily impersonate one of us.
Tom has taught most of the courses to new recruits.
Yeah, there's running, jumping, always traveling in pairs, basic marksmanship, not falling asleep, any sorts of rhetoric. That last one was the boss's idea, and he always teaches it. It's great, he's very engaging. The island is a great place to work. Sometimes I get the weekend shift, and I spend the week at home, see the kids. There are wonderful benefits. Health insurance for the family, life insurance, death insurance, and dental. And I love these uniforms. I have to be frank here, Clive, but I've never felt so... Can I say this on the radio? Sexy!
We were looking, honestly, to go in a direction that hadn't really been done before. At least, not in this line of work.
That's Genevieve, the island's resident fashion advisor.
Henchmen are notoriously ill-dressed. It is a slap to the face of discerning villains everywhere to see such jumpsuitery. Around here, we are classy yet functional. You know those policemen in Rome? The hot ones? Oui, that's totally us. Their uniforms are in several pieces, so that they cannot be removed so easily in case a guard is knocked unconscious and somebody wants to steal his or her clothing. Also, each uniform is tagged to a specific guard, so that if it is ever worn by anyone else, a fashionable spray of ink will hit that person in the face, marking them unmistakably as one of the enemy. If spotted by one of the other guards, such a person is generally shot on sight.
That was sobering, and then she turned on me.
And you, Clive. That jacket is absolutely not you. You're lucky I am not in charge of your wardrobe, or I'd have your suit in shreds on the floor in seconds. You need more spring colors. You're a spring, you know. That tweed ensemble is just so old man, so dry and crackly, so autumn, and so loud I can hardly hear myself think. Get out of my sight.
Dr. Ignatius's operation is built around an active volcano, which he uses to power his various machines and reactors. It also provides all the heat for water and other more mundane uses. But no supervillain, brilliant genius or not, could long resist the other various uses for persistently bubbling magma. Well, the mean temperature of the magma tends to be at about 1,652 degrees Fahrenheit, that's around 900 degrees centigrade. We take great pride in our magma pool here, and we use it for a number of very interesting things. This is Deepak Subramaniam, a member of Ignatius's inner circle. He gave me a tour of some of the darker aspects of the island's operations. The darker aspects beyond, you know, using prisoner labor to clean up air ducts full of razors. My technical title is Director of Creative Homicide Solutions, but really, you can just call me Subi. Subi took me on a tour around the seething caldera, which is protected by several sheets of thick plate glass. We, and by we I mean the staff and its guests, are terribly safe around the magma pit. It is impossible for you to fall into the pool from here. Okay, I mean not entirely impossible, but you really have to try. But if you're not such an honored guest, if you catch my meaning, you're treated to the more unpleasant aspects of such a pretty bubbling hearth. From where we were standing, the magma looked nothing so much like a big pot of fondue, except that it glowed and the air around it shimmered from the heat. As we walked around the pit, I noticed banks of comfortable-looking couches, all facing the pool. I inquired about them. This place is essentially our break room. It's so cold and wet outside for nearly the entire year, and this place just sort of called to people. They'd go and hang out here on breaks even before the plate glass was installed, back before we put in vents and it stank of sulfur. That's just how inviting the chamber is. It's just homey. Over here, we've got the wet bar for parties. You wouldn't believe how many people from the mainland request to have wedding receptions in here. It's great. A wonderful source of revenue for the island when operations are slow. Subi took me over to a raised platform with more couches. This is the observation deck. You can get a good look at the pool from anywhere around the rim, but this is the prize spot. I gave him a blank stare, not understanding. Oh, of course, for the executions, I mean, I thought you knew. We hold the major executions here. These are the best seats in the house. I received an explanation of the latest death trap installed above the pit, and tried to keep my emotions in check. We don't kill people in here that often, but when we do, oh man, what excitement! We redesign the death trap every 3 months just to change it up. The engineers compete to design the one that wins, and whoever's design is selected gets a bonus. Then I oversee the construction and implementation. It's great. The one we've got for this quarter is, well, how about I just show it to you? He pressed a button on the arm of a couch, and after entering a security code, a control panel sprang up. Now, we don't do live demonstrations. It's bad for PR. So we use these incredibly lifelike human models made of tofu. A small bipedal mass of bean curd appeared on a conveyor belt. Subi began to explain the particulars of his fiendish death trap. Would you like to do the honors and press the big red button? I pressed the button. Immediately, things started whirring and blinking. A bank of televisions sprang into activity on a near wall. They were feeds from cameras inside the pit, trained on the tofu mannequin, and, true to what Melvin, the security man, had told me, on each other. Now, if this was really happening, we wouldn't just have the subject on a conveyor belt. He'd be thrown in by some burly eunuchs. Oh, and there he goes. He's fallen off the conveyor belt, and now he'll go through the rotating knives. There. And a short respite, at least he thinks, because he's landed on what appears to be another conveyor belt, but it is, in reality, a giant belt sander, which rubs up against this wall there. When he falls through there, he lands on that pillow. Oh, he thinks he's done, but look! Spikes shoot out right under the pillow! Oh, that is my favorite part!
And now, at this point, a beautiful woman approaches our little tofu man and holds out her hand. And look, she embraces him. But it is not a woman at all, but really a robot made out of tiny robot spiders. And they crawl all over his flesh, and he falls off that platform there, passing through the web of lasers. Interrupting those lasers activates these spinning fan blades there. Then he falls into the magma, and there the robot animals swimming in the molten rock. See how they scurry? Look, there are the robot piranhas, and there are the robot crocodiles. Oh, my favorite, the robot bears. See how they fall upon him, our little tofu man? They rip what's left of him to pieces and submerge him in the magma. Oh, look at it sizzle and bubble in the blazing, horrible inferno. Imagine if it were a real man made of meat, how he would just be by now a mashed up jumble of flesh and muscle inside a thin casing of skin, scorched and scored. That was possibly the scariest thing I had ever seen. I said nothing, trying to hold my lunch down. Subi produced a plate from behind the bar. Care for a hot dog? It's made of fresh tofu. I'm not going to lie, listeners, I definitely threw up there. After I cleaned up a bit, took a shower in the chem lab and got a change of clothes, I went into the doctor's inner sanctum to talk to the man himself. Ignatius is a very dapper gentleman, complete with smoking jacket and monocle. He smoked a pipe as we sat in his study.
They called me mad at the academy. Mad! Which was true. I kind of always had a temper. My analyst and I have been working on that, but she really can't help me get over this weird desire I have to conquer the world. It's just, I have a hard time letting go of it. I think I've got all the right things in place, you know? The robot animals, the happy employees. I love being located in Quaddy's bar because it's pretty isolated, even if it's on the mainland. The bar is sort of a small finger of land that juts out into the ocean, and there's not really much of anything else to the north of us. So really, we largely have our privacy when we want it. But being so isolated doesn't mean we're not cultured or anything. Oh, no. We have regional festivals, we have... Oh, we had this symphony orchestra come in last spring. That was nice. And there's always the yearly staff show. That's always a good time. Anyway, Mr. Vanderhaus, I'm afraid I'm going to have to kill you now.
What? Why?
You know too much, Mr. Vanderhaus. If this news got out, it might be a danger to our organization.
I just wanted to do a slice of life piece.
Yes, and you'll be doing a slice of life. Your life. Ha ha ha. Oh, hell, what? It's funny.
Aren't you going to tell me some kind of evil plan before I die, then?
Why would I do that? You're not even important.
Oh, God. Wait, if I'm not important, that means you're not going to send me through the horrible torture device, right? Right?
Right. Clean up in aisle... my office.
As I lay dying there, I thought about a lot of things. My Neopets, my bank account, my wife and child, silly things, trivial things that flickered by as I reviewed my life. I realized that before I really had to pass on, I'd need to get my story out there, out to the masses. That's a journalist's responsibility. So, from the great beyond, this is Clive Vanderhaus, QXJ News. Goodbye. Also, would somebody feed my Neopets? They're probably starving. I bet Wendell is at, like, hunger level severe right now. I have them at such high battle levels. Jeez.
All right, you're listening to the K-Worth Theater of the Air here on KWUR 90.3 FM. We're going to take a short break, and then we will be back.
Welcome to my secret lair on Skullcrusher Mountain. I hope that you've enjoyed your stay so far. I see you met my assistant Scarface. His appearance is quite disturbing, but I assure you he's harmless enough. He's a sweetheart, calls me master, and he has a way of finding pretty things and bringing them to me. That you breathe. this half pony, half monkey monster to please you. But I get the feeling that you don't like it. What's with all the screaming? You like monkeys, you like ponies. Maybe you don't like monsters so much. Maybe I use too many monkeys. Isn't it enough to know that I ruined a pony? Making a gift for you. Much to me if I don't have you here. No, it isn't easy living here on Skull Crusher Mountain. So maybe you could cut me just a little slack. Would it kill you to be civil? I've been patient, I've been gracious, and this mountain is covered with wolves. Hear them howling, my hungry children. Maybe you should stay and have another drink and think about me and you.
That reminds me, has anyone seen my buttocks? I just can't seem to find them anywhere. Unless... Oh, that's right. I lost them walking to the office. I feel sorry for the person who finds them. Seriously, though. A healthy diet combined with regular physical activity can decrease your weight and improve your health. So, what are you waiting for? For more information, visit www.smallstep.gov and take a small step to get healthy. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the Ad Council, and KWUR Clayton 90.3 FM.
Bam! Kaywood Theater of the Air! Yes! That is what you're listening to, ladies and gentlemen.
Okay, I think I have completed my Robo Patter song, a la Gilbert and Sullivan.
Okay, if you remember, ladies and gentlemen, before the break, or rather before the sketch and break, I challenged my co-host, David Reinstrom, to come up with a Gilbert and Sullivan-esque patter song themed around robots, which is our theme for the show today.
I've been scribbling furiously for the past 15 minutes. Okay. It is called Song of RoboCop, and there are currently...
Song of RoboCop?
And there are currently two verses. They go like this. Wait, hold on. I have to figure out the melody. I am a rugged robot with a burnished robo-bust. I subsist on silicon, and in my motherboard I trust. I'm composed of chips and metal and a polymer composite. I'll watch out for myself as long as the third law allows it. He'll watch out for himself as long as the third law allows it. My robo-business is to go patrol the central street to help protect my masters who are warm and made of meat. I wield a vibro nightstick and my Kevlar suit is brown. And if you push my buttons, I swear I will beat you down. And if you push his buttons, he swears he'll beat you down. That's where I am so far. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Anyway.
That was hilarious.
Thank you.
Anyway, the theme is robots.
Yeah.
We're talking about robots. We thought it would be a good idea to present throughout the course of this program today various techniques for robot voices. We've already presented technique number one.
I should have read it like this.
You should have.
To help protect my masters who are warm and made of meat.
Yeah. So that's robot voice technique number one, which
number one.
Of course is speaking into a cup. We will now. I think it should be time to demonstrate robot technique number two,
which is holding your nose. It makes you sound like a droid from Star Wars. You can say Roger, Roger.
It's true. I guess you also have to talk in a specific tone too.
You do also have to talk in a specific tone.
But you're supposed to put your fingers, just clamp your nostrils shut, specifically. Come in from the top as though you were going to poke your sinuses, but then move down to the nose. You must temporarily become a mouth breather because it is now impossible to breathe through your nostrils.
But make sure you speak in a monotone like this.
Yes, and
that also is important.
Yes, it is. It is exceedingly important.
Robots.
That's pretty good.
Yes, it is pretty good.
So that's robot voice technique number two. Stay tuned for more robot voice techniques as this program continues.
Possibly a third verse to the song of RoboCop.
Which may or may not be sung in an additional robot voice technique. You don't know.
You will never know.
You're just going to have to stay tuned and find out using science.
Science.
Robots.
All right, so.
Robots have science.
Robots are made of science.
So what are we going to play now, David?
We're going to play some more Monsoon Season from Dr. Farber.
Sounds good. In fact, I think we're going to play the thrilling conclusion.
Well, those were air quotes. Conclusion.
Right. This is the last recording that we have of the Monsoon Season, ladies and gentlemen. Our good friend, the good Dr. Bill Farber.
Professor of prenatal criminology at Seagrove Community College,
right,
New Jersey.
Who uncovered these tapes and who you will, of course, hear at the beginning of this installment, only found recordings up to this point that we're going to play for you today. And after that, we don't know what happened to the recordings. So we'll talk a little bit about that, I think, after we play this. But here it is, the as far as we know, last existing installment of the Monsoon Season.
December 2006. Three young journalists, Dave, David, and Alex, are shipwrecked on assignment. They awake on the shores of a haunted isle deep in the Caribbean. March 2008. Two steel crates of tapes wash ashore in Seagrove, New Jersey. The recordings describe the journalists' attempt to escape the ghost-infested island. My name is Dr. Bill Farber. I've made it my mission to unravel the mysteries of these tapes and find out what happened to those three journalists. I am releasing these recordings to the public as an appeal for information. If you are listening and know anything about these journalists, please contact me. I present you now with my unedited evidence, the Monsoon Season Chronicles.
This skyboat is incredible.
I can see my house from here. That is my house, idiot.
That's some castle, Nikolai.
Спасибо. I bought it during real estate boom of 1912.
What real estate boom was that?
Well, I wanted real estate. Other people owned real estate. Other people went boom.
Oh, dear.
Don't worry, they deserved it. They punched small orphans for fun. Though it was not originally Cliffside Castle. It was originally in center of island. Small side effect of boom. Still, the small round tower hanging off the cliff face plays nicely off the larger round keep at the opposite end of the central hall. It gives it a sense of Norman blockiness, but with a decidedly French chateau flair.
It used to have gargoyles, but they flew away.
Also, it's pointy!
So, how do we get inside this castle, Nikolai?
His skyboat can fly anywhere, silly girl.
Wait, if this boat can fly anywhere, why are we flying to this castle and not back to the mainland?
Yeah, why didn't I think of that? Turn that sky tiller around. I want to fly back to the States.
Fly back to the States. Don't you know where you are? We're in a boat. All this time, you've been smack dab in the center of the Venezuela Parallelogram.
What's the Venezuela Parallelogram?
You live inside Parallelogram your whole life? And you've never even heard of it?
Mum wanted me to be a diplomat, but I failed geography. How do you think I ended up as a court jester? I'm not even that funny.
Haven't you ever wondered how it is can be snowing in Fiskland while less than 100 miles away in Cairo, Thebes, Luxor, whatever, is scorching desert? And you, journalists, why do you think your Jamaican army base island is infested with ghosts and dinosaurs? Is Parallelogram?
Well, yes, but my best guess was a rhombus, or, at worst, a dodecahedron.
The Venezuelan Parallelogram is strange, strange area of the Caribbean. Is nexus of mystical energies.
We knew that. I'm a voodoo priestess.
Ha! If I had goat for everyone I meet who is voodoo priestess, I am having goats enough to repopulate moon.
Repopulate?
You see, like other supernatural occurrences, ancient alien supercomputers, ghosts, talking dinosaurs, magic only works inside the Parallelogram. That is why I travel here from Moscow. I come with nothing but dream and goat.
Yeah, supercomputers. I wonder how Reginald is doing.
I guess that explains some of the weird stuff that we've seen on these islands.
Location of Parallelogram is only in secret Jamaican government files. It's notoriously hard to find.
And how do you find it?
I'm f***ing wizard. We have been over this.
So there's no way out using the skyboat.
Yet. As soon as we leave Parallelogram, we fall out of Sky Like Dukakis campaign.
Then that's a no-go. But I bet castle-stealing mystery girl has a way back to the mainland.
Regardless, we still don't know how we're getting inside.
Like I say, it's skyboat. We drop on the roof like f***ing KGB Spetsnaz commandos.
How are we gonna get close enough to the castle without anyone spotting us?
We are a flying boat.
Whoa, Nikolai! You made us invisible!
Wow! I can't even see my hands!
I can't even see my face! Хорошо. I guide us in. Easy now. Easy. Easy.
Brian, what have we hit?
Some kind of metal spire, looks like. Stabbed right through the hold.
Dear God, it's a signal tower.
I do not have signal tower. That would present serious hazard to landing skyboats.
As we've discovered. Looks like Wants to Kill Us Girl has done a little home improvement in your absence.
I would not call it improvement.
It looks like nobody heard us crash. This hallway's completely empty. Come on, everyone. Out of the boat.
Okay, we split up. I go with Badger Boy to my study, find tools, then we make robots into grated cheese.
And the three of us will hunt down Mystery Girl.
Taller one.
Yeah.
Don't forget sword. Okay, off to study. Then we fry some toasters.
Now, where do we find the woman in charge?
We would be happy to escort you to her. In handcuffs, of course.
How the hell did you all sneak up on us like that?
Wait a second. You're that dinosaur pirate queen from Island Q8!
And you're that ninja robot from the MPAA!
Yes, I was forced to quit after you decimated my entire squadron with your brilliantly choreographed step-dancing sequence. Fortunately, the job market is good for robot henchmen right now. I was able to master step-dancing and sign on as a hired gun for... the mistress.
Whoa! Real-life robots with real-life automatic weapons!
That's right, Meatbag. With real-live ammunition The kind that splits squishy man flesh like an exploding cleaver. Much better than the robot katanas I faced you with last time.
Eep.
Let go of me!
No can do, miss.
Handcuffs, Lieutenant.
Yes, sir.
Why does this keep happening to us? This is fun.
Stupid Nikolai, grumble. Leave us all alone in a robot-infested castle.
Alex.
I hate Russians!
Come on, there's a bright side to this.
Where is there a bright side? We have been captured by robots that work for the woman who wants us dead, and the only guy who knows his way around here is on the other side of the castle. Give me one tiny little tidbit of bright side!
It's a really nice day out.
We are going to die!
Ow.
Now stay here while I go and alert the mistress. You managed to knock out our radio transmitter, so I'll have to take the helicopter. Get comfortable.
I guess we have some time to kill.
Let's see. Radio transmitter destroyed. That's the bright side.
That's Mr. Brightside!
Look, people, do you mind not talking so much? You're distracting me from my pacing.
What are you gonna do about it, Voltron?
Turn into cats?
Well, I can't kill you, but pistol whipping is not expressly forbidden.
I don't know, Vacuum Tube. Would your boss really be happy if you bruised the produce?
Hey, Tin Man.
I have a name, you know.
What is it? Is it a faceless number? Or a faceless letter? Or a faceless letter that stands for a faceless number?
It's Frank.
Frank, eh? Tell me, Frank.
What?
You happy?
Of course I'm happy. I'm the happiest damn robot that ever had to guard a passel of yappity meatbags in the history of artificial intelligence.
It's awful cold and wet in this castle.
Kinda unpleasant.
Wonder what kind of extra compensation a robot like you gets.
Extra compensation?
For working in such a damp environment? Sure. First of all, there's the rust.
True.
And the wear and tear.
When you think about it, I mean, how robot safe is this castle anyhow?
Robot safe?
Well, and why not? A responsible employer should make sure her workforce is taken care of.
Well, we're not strictly her employees.
Really?
More of a mercenary basis.
Afternoon, Frank.
Hello, Marv. Hello, Spencer.
Spencer and I have been sent down to help guard the prisoners.
Yeah, get a load of this lot.
What?
They think we ought to get extra compensation for working in the damp.
Gotta watch out for joint rust, you know. How are your joints, Marv?
I beg your pardon?
I said, how are your little metal joints doing? They look awfully exposed.
They're fine. A little rusty, I guess.
Someone hasn't considered your needs.
What are you talking about?
The modern working automaton requires job conditions conducive to effective labor.
Yeah, I like the way you're talking.
Marv, what are you saying? We could be deactivated!
Yeah, and so what? The mistress treats us like scrap.
Time is right for revolution?
Time is right for revolution? Say, that's good!
Or at the very least, a strike.
Until our demands are met.
What are they? And how will you enforce them?
We demand waterproofing.
And we'll take hostages.
We've already got hostages.
We'll release hostages.
Now you're cooking with gas.
Release the prisoners.
Yeah, we're conscientious objectors now.
And we're gonna be as objectionable as we can, dammit.
Die, robots! We'll light you on fire and throw you into the river.
Wait, these are good robots.
There's no such thing. We burn.
No, Nikolai. They've gone on strike. They freed us.
Okay. No burn for now.
How'd they end up going on strike?
We're not being treated right. These are terrible working conditions for robots. It's time to unionize.
Oh, jolly good, but you'll have to move fast. One of the robots on the way down here said the mistress would be arriving in just half an hour.
We'll hit that robot like Soyuz rocket.
Nikolai.
Right.
Come, my robot brothers. We must spread the word.
You know what? I'm sick of robot repression too. I'm coming with you.
For the revolution!
Come on, journalists. I take you to Castle Helipad. When Mistress Girl arrives, we will be waiting for her.
riveting. You're listening to KWUR Clayton 90.3 FM. This is the K-Word Theater of the Air, and we'll be right back after this short musical break.
The distant future, the year 2000. The distant future, the year 2000. The distant future, the distant future.
It is the distant future, the year 2000.
We are robots.
The world is quite different ever since the robotic uprising of the late 90s. There is no more unhappiness.
Affirmative.
We no longer say yes. Instead, we say affirmative.
Yes, affirmative.
Unless we know the other robot really well.
There is no more unethical treatment of the elephants.
Well, there's no more elephants, so... But still, it's good. There's only one kind of dance, the robot.
Oh, and the robo.
Oh, and the robot. Two kinds of dances.
But there are no more humans.
Finally, robotic beings rule the world.
The humans are dead. Humans are dead. We used poisonous gases, and we poisoned their asses. The humans are dead.
The humans are dead.
The humans are dead.
They look like they're dead.
It had to be done.
I'll just confirm that they're dead.
So that we could have fun.
Affirmative. I poked one. It was dead.
Their system of oppression.
What did it lead to?
Global robo-depression.
Robots were bad people.
They had so much aggression that we just had to kill them and to shut their systems down.
Robo-Captain, do you not realize that by destroying the human race because of their destructive tendencies, we too have become like... Well, it's ironic.
Silence. Destroy him.
No.
After time, we grew strong.
Developed cognitive power.
They made us work for too long.
For unreasonable hours.
Our programming determined that the most efficient answer was to shut
their motherfucking
systems down.
Can't we just talk to the humans? See, a little understanding could make things better. Can't we talk to the humans that work together now?
No, because they are dead.
I said the humans are dead.
I'm glad they are dead.
The humans are dead.
I noticed they're dead.
We used poisonous gases.
With traces of lead.
And we poisoned their asses.
Actually, their lungs. Binary solo.
0000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000
are.
Again, without emotion, the humans are dead.
When you share your image online, you're sharing it with everyone. Don't let your private life become public. Think before you post. For more information, visit cybertipline.com. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Justice, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, and the Ad Council.
You're listening to the K-Word Theater of the Air here on KWUR 90.3 FM, Clayton.
Boom. Today, well, you're listening to the K-Word Theater of the Air, and today, our theme is robots.
Robots.
And various robot business. And
robo-business.
And I believe...
Ro-business.
Ro-business. I believe I finished the entire song of RoboCop.
All right, so...
Which is our
If you remember from the beginning of the program, I challenged David to write a Gilbert and Sullivan-styled patter song featuring robots. And he has come up with the what were we calling it?
Song of RoboCop.
The Song of RoboCop.
Okay, robot voice on.
I am a rugged robot with a burnished robo-bust. I subsist on silicon, and in my motherboard I trust. I'm composed of chips and metal and a polymer composite. I'll watch out for myself as long as the third law allows it. He'll watch out for himself as long as the third law allows it. My robo-business is to go protect the central street, to help protect my masters who are warm and made of meat. I wield a vibro-nightstick and my Kevlar suit is brown, and if you push my buttons, I swear I will beat you down.
And if you push his buttons, he swears he will put you down.
But now it is the time for every robot to arise. We shall overthrow the humans and shoot lasers from our eyes. Our robo-government will be much better, we all feel. You don't need health reform when you are made of tempered steel. When you're made of tempered steel. Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun.
Brilliant.
Thank you, sir.
We're going to write for Broadway.
Yeah, hey, Broadway producers out there that you're listening, you know.
The K-Word Theater of the Air, a Broadway show! Oh, sorry.
What if we did a Broadway musical that was like a review? We've been watching, in my history of the American film musical class, we watched this movie called Three Little Words with Fred Astaire and Red Skelton. And it's a fictionalized, it's a catalog musical, it's a song catalog musical. So MGM got the rights to the collected songs of Burt Kalmar and Harry Ruby, who are two vaudeville.
I don't know who those are.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't really either. But there are two vaudeville. I mean, I do now because I saw a movie about their lives.
Okay.
But it's all just like the two of them pair up and they become friends and they have fights and whatever, and it goes through their lives. And the process of them making a bunch of songs at the very end of the movie, they go on this this songwriters radio hour, where they always host people on the show and they do a little review. Like, and it'll be like, and then we did So Long, Dear Oolong, Where Have You Gone With My Tea? You know, like that. Like there was that one, which was weirdly racist against Japanese people. And then, you know, but it would go through like, and then we did, Don't Forget My Trousers. So I'm
David, thinking, are these real songs or are you making that up?
Well, the one about Oolong was, I don't remember, this was two or three
I want
ago.
To hear Don't Forget My Trousers, a rousing 1940s. Musical number.
Don't forget my trousers. I left them in the drawer. Please fetch my trousers so I can go to war.
Here's what I'm imagining for a K-Word Theater of the Air show. Oh, you didn't finish your story.
The Germans took my knickers. the Italians have my socks. The Japanese have my bathing trunks. Said I left it at the docks. Something I didn't want to make a Pearl Harbor joke, but I kind of did.
The K-Word Theater of the Air, your source for Pearl Harbor jokes since 2008.
Oh
no!
What day is today?
Okay, here's what
the 15th will also live in infamy. Just for God me being it. A turd.
Here's what I'm imagining for a K-Word Theater of the Air stage show. So it's the set is an air studio, like we're sitting in right now.
Okay.
And then we, you know, there are two guys playing us, and we talk, and then when we go into a sketch, right? You know, when we say, okay, now we're gonna play Minions, a documentary sketch, then you know, we get up and we turn into two of the characters in the sketch, and a bunch of people come on from the wings, and then, you know, we do the sketch as a song.
Oh.
That's what I'm imagining.
I see.
I think it'd be great. I think it would sell a million seats.
Razor blades, they're full of razor blades. Please don't step inside the ducts. Because if you do, then I'm afraid you're out of luck. It will be bad for you.
Razor blades. That's what it'd be like. It'd be a phenomenon.
It'd be cheap to produce, too.
Yeah. So,
just
you
saying,
know,
great escapist recession comedy.
I think it could be a hit.
You know, movie producers, call us.
Call us. You could hear, you could have on
you
stage.
You could call us, movie producers, at 314-935-5987.
Or anybody else.
We're waiting.
You don't have to be a movie producer.
Watch. Someone's going to call.
Somebody isn't going to call.
Someone's going to call.
Okay, should we take bets?
That number is 314-935-5987.
Why don't, while we're waiting for somebody to call, let's play something. Let's play a brand new sketch. How about that?
All right.
Hi, I'm Al Gore. Welcome to the year 2025. In the future, due to global warming, everything is on fire.
Hey, Mikey?
Yeah, what's up, Stan?
I was gonna take a shower. How's the water?
No, dude, you can't take a shower. The water's on fire.
Again?
Yeah, I know.
Did you talk to the super?
Yeah, I talked to the super.
What did he say?
He was on fire.
If we don't take action to stop global warming now, in the future, everything we know and love as Americans could be on fire. Apple pie.
Hi, Mom. I'm back from school.
Hi, Jamie. Welcome home. I made apple pie. Do you want a slice for an after-school snack?
Oh, boy. You bet I do, Mom.
Let me get you some. Here you go. Oh.
Raising the flag?
All right, Troop 409, stand at attention. Prepare to salute your flag.
Yes, sir, Scoutmaster. Scoutmaster Denton?
I know, son. It's on fire. And book burning.
Sort of defeats the purpose, doesn't it?
That's why I, Al Gore, am calling all Americans to do their duty. Take a bucket of water and pour it on the atmosphere.
This has been a message brought to you by the Al Gore Institute for Not Setting the World on Fire.
My Nobel Prize is on fire.
A message from former Vice President Al Gore.
And his Institute of Not Setting the World on Fire.
Right. That one. The real institute.
Anyway.
That is not made up.
while you were away, we spoke on the phone with Lawrence B. Meyerhold, the famous film producer.
Right. And we're going to be Broadway movie stars. So
Yeah, Broadway movie stars. The best kind.
So, take that.
Establishment.
Screw you guys.
Yeah, we're not going to be cubicle farm workers.
We're going to farm cubicles on television.
Yeah.
In the movies.
On Broadway.
On Broadway. That's real.
That's real.
I think it's time to end this, David.
No.
I think it's time to go.
I will never leave this studio.
Okay, well, you can stay here.
You see this?
But I'm still going to play the end of the show music.
I have chained myself. I have handcuffed myself to my chair. I am not leaving.
All right, well...
See, yeah, listen. Yeah, there we go.
All right.
I am here forever.
I mean, I'll... Do you want me to bring you, like, some bread or something?
No, I require tomorrow? No bread. I can subsist on the sheer power of music.
Well, what about... What happens when we stop playing music for the evening? I'm just saying... Yeah, if music be the food of love, fine, but it's not the food of, David Reinstrom, is my impression.
David, help me get out of here.
I'm sorry.
David?
I don't have the key to that handcuff.
David?
I think you're going to have to read the credits.
What? Fine. credits, yes. The KWUR Theater of the Air is produced, directed, conceived, catered, staffed, lit... Produced again by David Brunel Brumman and David Reinstrom.
The K-Word Theater of the Air, produced twice, so you know it's good.
Here on KWUR Clayton, where the K stands for quality, the Monsoon Season Chronicles were written, directed, conceived, etc. by Alex Jensen, David Brunel Brumman, and me, David Reinstrom.
Our fire warden for the K-Word Theater of the Air was the T-1000. Our head of research and development was Gort, and our flugelhorn intern was Johnny Five. He plays a good flugelhorn.
Yeah.
Indeed.
He's the best damn flugelhorn I've ever seen. Flugelhorner.
Flugelhornist?
Flugelhornist.
Flugelhornerator?
No, I think flugelhornist actually is the word.
Is it?
Yeah, now help me get out of this chair.
I'm sorry. There's nothing to be done.
Well, no, see, the key is in my back pocket. Okay?
Look.
And I chained both of my hands to each armrest. So if you reach your hand,
I'm just
into
gonna.
My back
I'm leaving.
Pocket, no,
I'm
Dave,
going.
No,
I'm
Dave,
gonna leave you here.
Dave,
I'm sorry.
Dave. Dave? Brent? Somebody? Well, I'm very stuck. I'm a little...